every day, you step off a curb in New York City and you implicitly trust that, like, a quarter inch layer of white paint will somehow stop 4,000 pounds of moving steel.
Right. It's honestly wild when you think about it.
It really is. I mean, it is a staggering amount of faith to place in a painted line and, you know, the completely distracted stranger behind the wheel. We just accept this fragile social contract just to get to work or grab a coffee.
Yeah, we have to. But the real question is, what happens when the physics of the city breaks that invisible contract?
Exactly. And that is why we are here. Welcome to our deep dive. Today, we are opening up this massive stack of case files, crash analytics, and legal reports provided by the law offices of Norman Gershon.
Huge amount of data in these files.
Oh, yeah. We are looking at the terrifying mechanics of out-of-control drivers across New York City and Westchester County. And our mission today isn't just to gawk at a tragedy specifically. We're looking at a devastating recent chain reaction crash in Harlem. Instead, we're using these case files as a masterclass to understand exactly how the physical environment, you know, turns a simple mistake into an absolute catastrophe.
And how the hidden algorithms of the insurance industry immediately mobilize against victims.
Yes, and the precise legal counterforce required to actually fight back.
I think the shift in perspective here is critical. Because when a horrific crash happens, the public focus is entirely on the twisted metal and the immediate shock of it all.
Sure, you see it on the local news.
Exactly. But the moment the ambulances leave, a really sophisticated, highly strategic war begins behind the scenes. We want to dismantle the anatomy of these events. Like, how does accident reconstruction actually prove what happened?
Right.
How do you legally untangle the web of liability when a single vehicle impacts dozens of lives in a crowded urban corridor? And most importantly, how do top-tier trial attorneys calculate and, well, fight for the true cost of a life permanently altered by someone else's negligence?
Okay, let's unpack this because I want to ground this in the reality of the reports in front of us. We are looking at a specific incident near West 125th Street and Frederick Douglass Boulevard in Harlem.
A notoriously busy area.
Right. It's this incredibly dense mix of commercial storefronts, residential buildings, heavy transit, and just a constant flow of cyclists and pedestrians. And an out-of-control driver barreled down this corridor, creating this massive chain reaction collision.
It's like a horrific high-speed domino effect.
That's exactly it. The sheer density of the city means one mistake instantly impacts dozens of lives. A bicyclist was killed, several others were seriously injured, and the vehicle struck other cars and a police cruiser before finally stopping.
Just devastating.
And the visceral detail that stands out in the report is that the driver allegedly continued to accelerate after the initial impact. Which, I mean, how do investigators actually know that? The driver surely isn't going to admit it.
Well, what's fascinating here is that they don't need the driver's admission. It shifts from the physical crash to the immediate legal and technical questions. Modern vehicles are essentially rolling computers.
Oh, like they have black boxes.
Exactly. They're equipped with event data recorders, or EDRs. It is basically a car's black box. Accident reconstructionists pull this data to look at the exact 5 seconds leading up to the impact.
Wow, 5 seconds.
Yeah, and the EDR records the exact throttle position, the steering angle, whether the brakes were applied, and of course, the vehicle's velocity.
So they can see everything the driver was doing.
Right. So in a complex multi-car pileup in Harlem, investigators combine that digital footprint with the physical evidence. They are measuring crush deformation, basically, how deeply the metal frame of the struck vehicles crumpled,
To see how fast they were going.
to calculate the exact kinetic energy transferred at the moment of impact.
So they aren't just relying on eyewitnesses who were, you know, likely in a state of sheer panic at the time. They are mathematically rebuilding the crash.
They have to. In a dense environment, the transfer of kinetic energy is catastrophic because there is literally nowhere for that energy to dissipate. A vehicle moving at 40 miles an hour down 125th Street carries an immense amount of force.
Right.
If the EDR shows the throttle remained engaged after the first strike, it explains the cascading destruction. The kinetic energy simply transfers from the car into a bicyclist, into parked vehicles.
Just bouncing off everything.
Yes, maintaining its destructive momentum until a rigid barrier like a building or a heavy police cruiser finally absorbs the remaining force.
The physics of that are terrifying, honestly. But it also raises a major question about who we blame.
Right.
Because the natural instinct is to point at the driver whose foot was on the gas pedal and declare case closed. But the source material spends a massive amount of time talking about third-party liability and municipal negligence. But wait, municipal negligence? Are you saying the city itself could actually be on the hook for a bad intersection or poor road design?
I know it sounds surprising, but yes.
Yeah.
In high-impact, multi-victim crashes, understanding every contributing factor is the only way families can pursue full compensation.
But hold on. Millions of people navigate that exact intersection at Frederick Douglass Boulevard every single day without crashing. If 99.9% of drivers get through it just fine, how can you legally blame the city's road design rather than just a single bad driver?
That is a totally valid point, and it's a high threshold to prove. But municipal negligence isn't about blaming the city for a driver's bad decision.
Okay.
It's about proving the city knowingly exacerbated the danger. Think of it from an engineering perspective. Traffic engineers analyze sight lines, pedestrian clearance times, and intersection geometry, right?
Right, they design the flow.
Exactly. So let's say a plaintiff's attorney subpoenas decades of Department of Transportation traffic studies. They might discover that the DOT's own engineers warned that a specific crosswalk algorithm only gives pedestrians 8 seconds to cross the street that mathematically requires 12 seconds for an average person to clear.
Oh, I see. So the city essentially engineered a conflict zone. They prioritized traffic throughput over pedestrian safety, even after being warned.
Exactly. That is the mechanism of liability. If an attorney can prove the municipality ignored its own data or failed to maintain safe infrastructure, like, you know, obscuring a stop sign with unpruned trees or ignoring a known history of collisions at a poorly graded curve, the city becomes legally liable for contributing to the environment that made the driver's error fatal.
Wow.
You are holding them accountable for a predictable failure rate. And the liability doesn't even stop there. You also have to look at the commercial ecosystem.
What do you mean?
Well, if the driver was working for a delivery app, did that company's algorithm penalize the driver for taking a rest break, effectively forcing a fatigued person to stay behind the wheel?
Oh, wow. That dramatically widens the scope of the investigation. You are no longer just suing a distracted driver. You are potentially taking on a tech giant's operational algorithm or a city's Department of Transportation.
Precisely.
Here's where it gets really interesting. That leads to this massive geographic shift in these case files. Because the environment completely dictates the physics of the crash. The reports cover not just New York City, but stretch north into Yonkers, White Plains, and throughout Westchester County.
Yeah, the psychology of the drive changes as you move north and the physics become significantly more lethal.
Right. It's like transitioning from the gridlock of Harlem to the parkways of Westchester is like moving from an unpredictable, claustrophobic obstacle course to a high-speed gauntlet, where the type of danger changes, but the threat level remains identical.
Absolutely.
Because in the city, the threat is lateral. Someone stepping off a curb, a delivery bike darting out from behind a box truck. But on major Westchester roadways, like the Hutchinson River Parkway, the Bronx River Parkway, or I-287, you are dealing with forward-facing velocity.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, these specific environmental risks directly lead to catastrophic outcomes when even a moment of negligence occurs. And those specific Westchester parkways carry a hidden engineering danger.
Like the road design itself.
Yeah. The Hutchinson River Parkway, for example, was designed in the 1920s.
Right, for Model Ts, basically.
Exactly. It was engineered for vehicles driving 35 miles per hour. Today, you have drivers piloting 5,000-pound SUVs at 70 miles per hour on those exact same 1920s turning radii. The infrastructure is fundamentally incompatible with modern vehicle dynamics.
Which introduces the concept of target fixation and the illusion of safety. Because the lanes are relatively clear, drivers feel safe checking a text or looking away for 2 seconds. But I remember looking at the crash physics in the notes. Kinetic energy doesn't scale linearly with speed, right? It squares.
That is a fundamental rule of accident reconstruction. If you double your speed from 30 miles per hour to 60 miles per hour, your stopping distance doesn't double, it quadruples.
That is insane.
The destructive energy is 4 times greater. So when a sudden traffic shift occurs on a blind curve on the hutch, say traffic comes to a dead halt, that 2-second distraction means the driver doesn't even touch the brakes before impact.
They just plow right in.
The collision happens at 60 miles an hour. The result isn't a fender bender. It is a multi-fatality event where vehicles are literally sheared apart.
Just horrible. And the moment that kind of kinetic energy is unleashed, the entire landscape of the incident shifts. Because surviving the trauma of a crash like that is just the physical battle. The case files show that almost immediately, the victims are thrust into an incredibly hostile financial and legal arena.
Right. The aftermath is not a neutral process. You are essentially playing chess against a supercomputer that has already processed millions of these exact crashes.
It's a machine.
Insurance companies are not in the business of charity. They're in the business of risk mitigation. They utilize advanced software programs, often referred to in the industry as systems like Colossus, to calculate the absolute minimum payout required to make a claim go away.
So what does this all mean? I want to dig into that mechanism. What is a family supposed to do when they are grieving, yet simultaneously facing an insurance company that is already working to minimize their payout? Why is it such an adversarial process?
Because the algorithm is literally designed to devalue the human element. The software assigns severity points to medical codes. It looks at the zip code, the specific injuries, and historical data.
Oh, cool.
But more aggressively, major insurance carriers dispatch rapid response investigative teams. Sometimes these corporate investigators are on the scene of a fatal highway crash before the vehicles are even towed.
Wait, really? Before the tow trucks?
Oh, absolutely. They're taking photographs, interviewing traumatized witnesses, and looking for any shred of evidence to shift comparative negligence onto the victim. They might try to get a grieving widow or a patient sitting in an ICU to give a recorded statement while they are still in shock.
That feels so predatory.
It is. They know that any inconsistency will be used to devalue their claim later. This is exactly why victims cannot fight this battle alone. They need an experienced trial attorney to level the playing field.
So while a family is trying to figure out how they are going to pay for, you know, three future spinal surgeries or survive without the primary breadwinner's income, the insurance machine is already five moves ahead, actively building a defense to deny them that money.
Precisely. To counter a highly funded rapid response corporate team, backed by algorithmic software, you need an equally aggressive counterforce. The insurance software calculates the risk of a jury verdict.
Okay.
If a victim hires a lawyer who runs a settlement mill, meaning they never actually take cases to trial, the software flags that attorney as a 0% trial risk.
Oh, so the computer knows they'll just take whatever.
Exactly. The computer spits out a lowball offer because it knows the lawyer will eventually fold. To break the algorithm, you need an attorney whose name actively changes the risk calculation.
Which is why the source material frames the law offices of Norman Gershon not just as legal representation, but as that necessary counterforce for people in NYC, Yonkers, White Plains, and Westchester. The phrase used in the reports that Norman Gershon is the lawyer other attorneys call to try their toughest cases. But what exactly makes someone the lawyer's lawyer? Why do other attorneys hand their toughest cases to him?
Well, it comes down to his proven ability to build powerful cases, fearlessly challenge insurance companies, and deliver compelling, undeniable arguments before a jury. Because taking a catastrophic injury case to a jury verdict is a highly specialized skill set.
I'm sure it is.
A lot of attorneys are perfectly capable of negotiating a standard, you know, whiplash settlement. But when you have a multi-million dollar catastrophic injury in White Plains or a wrongful death case in the Bronx, the insurance company simply refuses to pay fair value.
Right.
The case has to go to trial. Other attorneys bring in Norman Gershon because he has over 35 years of trial experience, specifically destroying the defenses built by those corporate teams.
Wow, 35 years.
Yeah. He knows how to cross-examine their biomechanical experts and dismantle their accident reconstruction theories in front of a jury. The insurance companies know and fear his firm. When his name goes on the docket, the software's risk calculation is forced to change.
The numbers in the case studies really illustrate how that counterforce works in practice. Let's look at the mechanics of a specific victory mentioned here. A $16.5 million verdict in Betancourt v. NYCTA in the Bronx Supreme Court, and a $14.5 million settlement in Lynn v. MTA in Queens.
Massive cases.
Huge. And there are multiple $5-plus million verdicts here, too. How does a trial lawyer actually prove a number like $16.5 million? You don't just stand in front of a jury and ask for a giant check.
Not at all. Securing an eight-figure verdict requires a massive upfront investment of resources to build an undeniable evidentiary foundation. To prove $16.5 million, an attorney like Gershon employs forensic economists, vocational rehabilitation experts, and life care planners.
So a whole team of experts.
Oh, yeah. They don't just look at the hospital bill from last week. They project the cost of medical inflation over the next 40 years.
Wow.
They calculate the precise cost of a lifetime of 247 at-home nursing care, the future surgeries required to maintain medical hardware, and the exact trajectory of lost earning capacity if the victim had become, say, a senior executive.
They transform the abstract horror of a crash into a rigorous, mathematically sound financial demand that a jury can confidently award.
It is the ultimate leveling of the playing field. You are taking the victim's reality and translating it into the only language the corporate algorithms understand: quantifiable financial risk.
And what is vital for listeners to understand about this level of legal firepower, especially when you are already drowning in medical debt, is the financial structure. You only pay if you win.
Which is huge.
Right. The firm advances all the massive costs for those forensic experts and crash investigators. If they don't secure a verdict or settlement, you don't owe them for those costs.
That contingency fee structure is the key to accessing justice. It allows a construction worker in Yonkers who is struck by a commercial truck to bring the exact same level of legal firepower to the courtroom as a multi-billion-dollar insurance conglomerate.
And the proof of that impact is in the client testimonials we have in the files. Michael Benowich describes him as smart, experienced, compassionate, tough, the class of the field.
High praise.
Absolutely. Another client, our decisor, refers to him as a brilliant attorney, a beast in the courtroom, and Anthony Mangino noted that he worked tirelessly and delivered a better outcome than expected. That phrase, a beast in the courtroom, really captures what you need when you are up against a system designed to deny you compensation. You need someone who refuses to back down.
That relentless advocacy is critical because the trauma of these accidents is lifelong. If you suffer a traumatic brain injury in a pedestrian knockdown, or your spine is compromised in a multi-car crash on I-287, your primary job needs to be physical recovery.
Just trying to heal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You cannot be fielding calls from hostile adjusters trying to trick you into a recorded statement. Having an elite trial, firm step in creates an immediate shield. The insurance company is legally barred from contacting you directly. They have to go through your attorney.
So the message from the source material is incredibly clear. If you find yourself in the devastating aftermath of a car, truck, pedestrian, or cyclist accident anywhere in New York City, Yonkers, White Plains, or throughout Westchester County, you need to deploy that shield immediately. You need to put 35 years of trial experience to work for you.
You really do.
The case files stress that there is only one phone number to use for the law offices of Norman Gershon, and that is 914-485-4444. Again, to get that level of representation, call 914-485-1444.
Because the speed at which you make that call often determines the trajectory of the entire case. Because while you are waiting, the insurance company is actively building their defense. Evidence disappears, skid marks wash away, and unrepresented victims inadvertently damage their own claims.
Right. Before we close out this deep dive, we have to look at the actionable safety advice the source material emphasizes. Because understanding the mechanics of liability is important, but preventing the impact is the ultimate goal.
Of course.
The primary takeaway is defensive hyper-awareness. When you are in complex urban grids like Harlem, you have to anticipate the kinetic energy around you. Assume the driver next to you is distracted. Give cyclists and pedestrians an aggressive amount of space, recognizing that they have zero structural protection.
Right, they are totally exposed.
And when you transition to high-speed environments like the Westchester Parkways, recognize the physics at play. A three-second glance at your phone at 65 miles an hour means you have traveled the length of a football field entirely blind.
The physics do not forgive distraction. But the sobering reality underlying all of these reports is that you can drive perfectly. You can be standing entirely legally in a crosswalk or biking in a designated lane and still have your life upended by the negligence of a municipal planner, an exhausted delivery driver, or a reckless commuter.
That brings us right back to the beginning. The source material forces us to look critically at the environment we navigate every day. We are constantly relying on a deeply fragile social contract. We place our physical safety and the safety of our families in the hands of thousands of distracted strangers and aging infrastructure every single time we step out the door.
This raises an important question, something really to think about. While not every accident can be prevented, we have to acknowledge the reality of this dense, nonstop region. When that social contract violently breaks, the most important question isn't just how we heal our bodies.
Right.
It is who we trust to step into the legal arena, challenge the algorithms, and forcefully demand that the responsible parties make it right.